Enjoy the summer weather at Asda this weekend with our top deals on beer. Like 3 for £20 on 12 packs of Foster's, Carlin and Budweiser. Asda, save money, live better. British summer sunshine subject to availability with risk of occasional showers or cloud cover. Max 6 per customer. Selected stores subject to availability. Individually £8. Ends 4th of July. Drink aware. Unavailable in Scotland.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome off the post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. Ant, how are you?
Russell, I am awake for the most part.
Me too. I've been at it all day, and it's been a crazy day in the hockey world, and we actually have a guest, Michael Jello. He's coming on to talk about this too, because we need more than two people to analyze this. Like, literally, there's been an avalanche of players. What was it, like $500 million spent? Mike, how are you?
Sick.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Sick. Nice.
I'd like to have a bit of that $500 million.
Sure, I think we all would. All right, so let's talk about, I guess, we'll hit on some of the interesting ones, and then we'll kind of go around. But, you know, Milan Lucic is interesting because it's 7 years. It's got all kinds of bonuses. I get that he wants to play with McDavid, and I think that's great, but in 4 years after playing with McDavid, when they're, you know, really going to be a big-time contender, I don't know if he'll be there. I mean, Ant, what do you think about, you know, the wheels on Lucic 4 years down the line, let alone seven?
It's a real good question, because, again, he plays such a he's one of those classic cases where he needs to keep himself in tip-top shape, because the way his style of play does not age well. It just doesn't. I get what the Oilers are trying to do here. It's a big splash. I mean, it's going into a new arena, giving some protection, obviously, for Connor McDavid. But it kind of accelerates things here in terms of how quickly the Oilers want to try to compete here for a postseason berth. And in the West, it's a tall order. Even, again, when I'm looking at that team's blue line and going, that blue line isn't a Western Conference playoff team's blue line.
Not yet.
And
it's a little better, though. It is better.
It's a little better. It's a little better. No question about that. But, again, it's not one of those things where I feel like that Lucic is the guy that's going to knock down the door for a postseason berth this season. But we're going to see.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm equally concerned about Lucic, you know, falling off the cliff. I mean, I'm not comparing the two, but a guy like David Clarkson was around the same age, has played the same type of game. Lucic is much more talented offensively, but you could see the drop-off as soon as he signed with the Leafs. He wasn't even close to the player that he was in New Jersey. Now, I think Lucic can be effective with McDavid for a couple years, but then, you know, once he slows down even more, then he might become a liability. Then you got 4 or 5 more years at $6 million. So that's a little concerning.
Sure. All right. So we go to the Andrew Ladd signing, which, again, I don't think I've really hidden it. I would have kept Kyle Okposo. I actually think the Kyle Okposo contract that Buffalo signed is better than the Ladd contract. Now, look, I get that Ladd has a history of winning, and I get that he'll be great in the locker room and everything else, but here's my one thing. We've learned in this NHL that your top line should have a fair amount of speed, and now I think the Islanders' top line has slowed down because Tavares isn't the fastest. It's going to be like a half-court offense.
Yeah, I agree with that in terms of the speed quotient there that seems to drop down a bit here with Ladd. Again, Islanders putting obviously a big premium on Ladd's experience, leadership, things of that sort. And again, those are things that are extremely important for an Islander team that's trying to move things along here. But again, when you're packing in a 7-year deal on a player like Ladd, he's another one who plays a little not quite certainly as heavy a game as Lucic does, but he does. But again, he's not what I would call—he's not like lightning fast feet of foot. And you're losing Okposo, certainly takes away from that speed quotient there. I am going to be interested. It's another one of those things where, again, the Islanders are going to need to be pushing, with him being 30 years old, they're going to really be needing to push hard here for a postseason berth going forward. They did add speed today, the Islanders, with Jason Chimura, but again, Chimura, another guy with long-term experience as well. He has speed, so at least in the bottom six, they've added a quick player. But again, Chimera's, you know, 37. It doesn't have a long window. So again, the Islanders have sort of made a signal here with this signing that they're going to need to make this push now in terms of getting into the cup, in terms of getting deeper into the postseason and a potential cup final berth.
And they need another forward probably still. Mike, what do you think?
I mean, the benefit with Chimura is it was only a 2-year deal. Ladd, I mean, the concern is, if you looked at him after the trade from Winnipeg to Chicago, he dropped like a stone. I mean, he really did not play that well with Chicago. So the concern is, and now they got him at 5.25 as opposed to 6 for some of these other players, but you gave him 7 years. And, I mean, again, it's 2 or 3 years into this deal, it's going to be a concern. Now, what might be the case is they may play him on a second line, and maybe guys like Barzal or Del Cole, who can stay up to the pace with a guy like Tavares, will play on that first line. But I think they brought him in to be a first-line guy, and I just don't know if it's a good fit.
Okay, so we move to the Erickson deal and the Red Wings. I get it from the Swede perspective, from the perspective where Erickson really is a great all-around player. He's not great at any one thing, but he is really good solidly all around. And so I look at that and I say, okay, you know what? I don't think that's a bad deal. I actually kind of like that deal. The weird one is the Vanek one, and because I don't mind what they signed him for. I think that's good. But I think it's kind of weird that Darren Helm is making more per year than Thomas Vanek. Like, it just doesn't – my mind doesn't – it doesn't reconcile well in my mind.
I'm going to probably – I'm going to go a little bit more on the flip side of this. The Erickson signing to me, well, I like Erickson a lot. Vancouver's in kind of a weird spot right
now.
He's signing with Vancouver right now. And
he's playing with two Swedes
again,
and the Sabines,
He's playing – yeah, he's going to be playing with two Swedes, and that's going to be, you know, certainly interesting to watch how Erickson – and he'll be playing, obviously, almost certainly playing in the World Cup of Hockey with those two guys. I almost consider that probably a mandate from Jim Benning to make sure that he plays with those guys.
Yeah.
But they're in a weird spot though. Again, where the Canucks are as a team and committing 6 years to a 31-year-old here when they probably need to start accelerating, their process with regards to transitioning away. It's almost like an expensive later in the career gift to the Sedin twins to say, we love you boys and we're going to give you, you know, Louis Erickson on your wing here. You got, you know, make it work. And it's one of those things where I'm just not necessarily convinced that this is the right time. I feel like Vancouver needed more behind them. That Erickson's the guy that I could see making that acquisition if they are on the verge of not only pushing into the postseason, but pushing for a cup. But Canucks are nowhere near that right now. So that one I'm a little bit weird on. The Vanek signing, on the other hand, again, with him being bought out, I know it seems weird, but again, him being bought out, pretty much opportunity to go wherever it is he wants to. He's still getting the amount of money that he's getting from the buyout, plus – he gets 1 year playing in Detroit, could be playing with possibly Franz Nielsen on a line, possibly on a higher line. I'm actually – the Vanek deal, if he's got his head right, could actually be a good one, I think, for Detroit.
Sure.
It could be potentially one of those things where they got him at a bargain and it could work very well. In some ways, though, the Nielsen signing, as much as I love Franz Nielsen as a player when he's at the Islanders, that – investment might be a little bit of a concern with 6 years in his contract.
It's a lot of years.
With Detroit. It's a lot of years for a guy in his 30s but for them to invest in. But again, they needed to go to plan B after they were unable to get involved, obviously, to try to reel in Steven Stamkos. So he and Helm ended up being the center ice plan B for Kenny Holland.
Mike, you could pick either team and go either way because I morphed them all together there. Sorry.
Well, I mean, and this is an area of disagreement between me and Russ. I think that the Erickson signing, although I like Erickson as a player and I think he still can contribute, it just perpetuates this delusion that Vancouver is a team that's a now team and that can compete because, you know, you've got the Sedins with a couple years left on a contract, Edler with 3 years left, Ryan Miller with a year left in his deal, and Jim Benning is going about this. You know, they make the trade for Gabranson. He's going about this as this team is going to be competitive in the Western Conference where they finished 28th, and I think they should be rebuilding around guys like Vertanen and Horvat and their young players. But they're going full bore trying to make the playoffs. That might be what the ownership wants, but I just don't think it benefits the franchise. But that being said, Erickson with the Sedins should be an effective line. If you know the young players do step up, they could make the playoffs, but I just don't see them being in the same league as the Chicagos and the Anaheims and the LAs. As for Detroit, they got stuck without Stamkos. You know, Stamkos mm-hmm. didn't go anywhere other than Tampa. They had all this money to spend. And, you know, the Nielsen signing compared to some of the other ones is okay. I like Nielsen as a player. He's at the right age. He maybe will not be effective at the end of this deal, but that's the case with most of these guys. You know, Vanek is a one-year signing, so it's not a big risk, and it has a potential upside. I don't think he's going to ever gain the speed that he had early in his career, but he can still put the puck in the net. So I don't think they made really bad moves. I just think they really got caught with the fact that they couldn't get even a crack at Stamkos.
Okay. And what do you think of the James Reimer signing? Clearly they're trying to get overlap with Roberto Luongo there, but is he the right guy to get overlap with? Like, I just think that deal was just kind of weird on the years because I don't know if anybody else would have signed him for that many years.
He's 37. Here's the thing. I mean, we're looking at Luongo, 37 years old, coming off of a hip, he'll be coming off of hip surgery going into the season. You know, there's not a lot of time left. And in this circumstance, once I sort of had a good idea of what the situation was with Luongo, Reimer's been a guy who I've always felt, going back, obviously going into his Toronto days, that I felt that there were times when he needed to get a better shake as a potential NHL starting goaltender. And okay. I think the Reimer deal is actually good because, again, if they have Luongo for at least maybe 2-3 more years and Reimer's there, they're going to feel comfortable enough there to make the transition, begin drafting, you know, young goaltenders in the system as well. And by that point, again, and Reimer gets a good opportunity here. And, again, he knows with Luongo, you know, hips and goalies, it can be potentially a dicey proposition.
Yeah, Marty Baron just posted, you know, earlier in the day that he thinks maybe they did the signing because maybe Luongo won't start the season because of the hip surgery. Now,
that's a concern, exactly. And that gives Reimer opportunity here to, and, again, the Panthers have made the signal to everybody that they are very serious here about competing in the Eastern Conference and getting a push here to the Cup final. So the Reimer deal for me, after I got over a little bit of the shock of hearing 5 years on him, I'm realizing what the overlap situation is and the concern that they have here, I think, with Luongo. So I'm actually okay with this signing.
Okay. Mike?
Well, I've seen James Reimer play his entire career. I mean, obviously Luongo's 37 years old, coming off this, you know, hip situation. I think he's being brought in to be a 1B and play more than a normal backup would. You know, play maybe 30 games instead of 20, maybe 30 to 35. And as insurance in case Luongo goes down. I just know from, and maybe it's not fair to say this because there were some pretty lousy Toronto teams in front of him, he's not a number one goaltender. He's never been able to stay healthy long enough. He's had groin problems and other problems, concussion problems throughout his career. And when he did stay healthy, he was not consistent. So I know in that small window in San Jose, he had 3 shutouts in 8 games, but he's going to have to prove it to me. He's still young enough that maybe, you know, with a better defense in front of him, he can be a decent number one or a very good 1B type goaltender, but I'm still skeptical about James Reimer.
Okay. I mean, I'm right in the middle. I'm sort of halfway in between you and Anthony on this one, so we'll see. Let's talk about the Dallas Stars for a minute, because I felt like the loss of Colton Seaver was a bad loss for them, good game by Florida, because I saw something in the playoffs that I really had never seen from them before, and it's not just 5 points. It was just overall better play. But I didn't understand the Hemwe signing because, you know, Hemwe is a good player, don't get me wrong, but he can't play enough games anymore. He's about 20 points a year. So you legitimately got him as a, you know, like an older kind of puck mover. And to me, Ant, this just smacks of, like, Lindy wanting a veteran rather than using, like, Esa Lindell, who would probably put in a lot better season had he, if he gets a chance this year, which sounds like he may not.
Yeah, but at the same time, I would say the risk factor on this, it's a two-year contract. So for me, for a Dallas Stars team that is trying to keep themselves, obviously, a pace in the Western Conference, defenses, obviously, they were losing Chris Russell to begin with. So in my mind, to me, it's kind of a having, again, yeah, does Lindy prefer veterans? Of course he does. But at the same time, it's a signing that I'm, again, based on term and how
three and
I
and
think
a half
they're going to use him. 3.5 is a lot, I agree. But again, at 2 years, that still leaves an open door for some of the other defensemen in the system to begin to get themselves. I don't think it's a bad window. If he signed like a 4 or 5 year deal, I would have been shaking my head. But at 2 years, I think it's reasonable.
Now, what about losing Seaver?
Seaver's an interesting one. Yeah, I think Florida really made out well there in getting him. He's one of the guys I'd definitely be a little bit more concerned about in terms of losing. But you know, these are the decisions that Dallas management makes in this circumstance. I think Florida it'll go to Florida's benefit over the long haul.
Mike?
Well, I mean, we know that Hamus was brought in because they're going to lose Russell, they're going to lose Demers. Demers is probably going to make $5 million plus on the open market. And, yeah, I mean, I think it's a low-risk signing in the sense that if he's done, you know, you only have 1 year to buy out if he just can't do it. But, you know, 375 is not a cap killer. So I think it's a good risk. I don't know how much he has left, and he's been injured off and on the last few years. And maybe the wear and tear has finally caught up to him. But, yeah, Lindy doesn't like playing rookies. He didn't like playing rookies in Buffalo. And I'm sure he hasn't changed in Dallas. So, you know, it's going to take a while. You know, these guys like Honka and Oleksiak and Lindell are probably going to have to overcook down with the Texas Stars. And maybe they come up when they're 23 or 24. But that just should be a lot sooner than that.
Yeah. All right. So now we'll touch on some of the minor ones. I want to go with, as a minor one, the Michael Grabner to the Rangers one, because I think some fans are looking at that and saying, well, we didn't pay too much, you know, 1.66 for two, you know, per year for 2 years. And yeah, Stallbird was pretty good, but he's faster, you know, and he could play the PK in Grabner. But, you know, Grabner is a guy that he just, I used a Russ Cardinal analogy earlier, Ant, because when he went to the Rangers, everybody was just blinded by his speed, but he could never finish. And I think at this point in his career, I mean, Grabner had 9 goals last year, 18 points. He is that guy with speed that, yes, he could play the PK, but he really can't finish. And I think somehow some Ranger fans are sort of thinking he could replace what they lost in Hagelin, but this is like two players removed. And I don't think Michael Grabner, even 2 years ago, could replace what they lost in Carl Hagelin. But what do you think?
No, I mean, certainly I don't see him as a Hagelin replacement in this circumstance. Although, again, the speed and lack of finishing ability would seemingly correspond to one another. But in terms of, again, this is one of those contracts where, again, the Rangers are kind of just saying, you know, they're familiar with him enough from the time he was playing with the Islanders. Again, there's years on in this terms of this deal. And again, at one point, at the number he's got, at 1.6, at least 1.65, I don't think that was the number. It's one of those acquisitions where it's kind of like, if it works, great. If it doesn't, meh. You know, it's one of those things where, again, much like Cam, who's, again, the buyout would be relatively not too bad for them. So it's basically the Rangers trying to have someone play in that, as you said, in that sort of Hagelin role, and they're kind of hope rolling the dice and hoping the fact that maybe Grabner finds something coming there.
Mike?
I've referred to Michael Grabner as the tank specialist because he played 80 games last year, and I think he had about 20 breakaways, a lot of them shorthanded, and I think he scored on one of them. He just couldn't score. And this is not, you know, for the Rangers fans who think, you know, who may be delusional in thinking this is a great signing, this is not the Michael Grabner who was a Calder Trophy finalist, not the guy who scored 34 goals.
No.
He's got speed. He can kill penalties. He'd be good on your, you know, fourth line or on a third line checking line if you're just looking for defense. But if you're looking for secondary scoring, it's not there.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I'm still hoping the Rangers will give Sam Gagne a call. Last I heard, the Canucks are interested.
The Rangers did sign Nathan Gerby, didn't they, today?
They did, and I like Gerby.
They did get Gerby.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I do. And he'll be a fourth liner if he makes it. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people – here's the funny thing about Gerby, okay? I mean, Zuccarello's on the team, and everybody knows he's a stud. Gerby gets signed in, and I see people writing, well, he's 5'5", so, you know, he's probably not going to make it. And I'm thinking, oh, really? Have you not seen Nate Gerby play? He plays a little bigger than that. So I don't know. I think Ranger fans are in a bad way right now because, like, it's just, you know, things just aren't breaking right for him.
Yeah, well, I'll say if Gerby stands on Zuccarello's shoulders, does that make up one Dylan McElrath?
Yeah, it kind of does. All right, so let's talk about Dale Weiss, because you and I had an off-air conversation a couple days ago.
Did.
I brought up Dale Weiss. You liked the idea. We chatted about it. We were like, yeah, that sounds good. And then we sort of tabled it. We never did anything with it. And then
we were looking at different options there. I remember mentioning our conversation. I met Brett Connolly and a couple others.
Yeah.
But Weiss was always one that we kept filed away, and it came to fruition today.
It did, and I think it's a good signing because at the end of the day, he'll give more offense than Ryan White was able to give and probably a few less dumb penalties. He's just as physical. He's bigger. So I think it really serves the Flyers well. He's not old, so they can't, you know, like, nobody could hold Ron Hextall's feet to the fire and say, well, you just signed a guy 30 and over. You said you weren't going to. He's not. So I think it fits the criteria.
No, I definitely think it fits the Flyers' criteria if they're looking in terms of upgrading. The thing is, with Weiss, he's a bit more versatile in the fact that he's obviously had experience playing both the pivot and the wing. So for Philadelphia, who prizes having guys, and especially in their bottom six, who can switch back and forth, that's pretty important. But he also can go up maybe a little bit further. He can play, whereas Ryan White, I think, it was sort of locked in to a fourth, certainly a fourth line role. Weiss is a guy that you can potentially swing him up to the third line. Obviously, I'm going to put him necessarily in a scoring line role, but he's solid. He's feisty, strong player, gets under people's skins. And again, initially, while people were taken aback by the term on it, again, I think the contract is befitting because, again, there was quite a few teams. He said, according to Weiss, there was 10 to 12 teams that he had heard from. With regards to the Flyers, knew they had competition in that spot. So, again, I think the Weiss signing was a good one. I'm not a guy – I like Ryan White. I wasn't to the point where it was like you had to bring him back, and it was absolutely lockstep that Philadelphia needed to do so. So I was actually – I was happy with I thought the Weiss signing was good, especially the term being reasonable. But the Boyd Gordon signing was actually one that was rather fascinating as well. That caused a lot of conversation among Flyers fans because, again, they're getting now a guy who is a face-off ace, and it also – interesting enough, as Ron Hextall stated in his conference call today, that Gordon he's going to be key in terms of maybe not from the offensive numbers perspective, but in terms of being a defensive specialist and penalty killing specialist, taking some of that off of Claude Giroux's shoulders, I think is one of the things that they were looking at there with Gordon. Initially, I thought maybe he would be like a swing guy between AHL and NHL, but it looks like he's definitely going to be on roster for Philly as their fourth line center going forward and a PK specialist. So, both Flyer signings, I think, taken together, were good upgrades for their bottom six.
Any thoughts about those, Mike?
Well, I especially Weiss. I mean, I look at the Weiss signing and the signing that the Leafs made in Matt Martin and put them in the sort of same category. Both 27 years old, and I think, you know, Weiss, as Anthony said, could play on a third line. I'm not sure Martin is going to get that chance. It seemed Lou Lamoriello is indicated in his press conference that what they really want out of Martin is just be the same guy that he was with the Islanders, be a crash and bang guy, protect his, not be a goon, not be the enforcer, but just be an energy guy and help out the fourth line. And I think that might be his role with Philadelphia, but I think he's going to be maybe a little higher in the lineup. But they both got 4 years. They both got around $2.5 million. I think the only problem I have with either signing is the fourth year, but they're still in their late 20s. So you're talking about them getting to 30 years old. But as we know, these type of players, they start to slow down, they start to get the wear and tear, and then they become albatrosses.
Yeah. All right. So we, obviously there's other signings, right? We didn't even get into Weber, Subban. I don't know. And Mike and I talked about it to death. Do you have any real thoughts about that anymore?
This, again, opportunities there. I mean, a lot of conversation we've had, obviously, on social media and everything. But my thought is, again, I think, and I'll just say it again, that Subban, I think, is a perfect fit for the type of system that Peter Laviolette plays. The interesting was going to be how Nashville plays, I think, in their own end without it's a very different identity now, not having Shea Weber there. Now, Weber may not have been a perfect match for the style of play that Laviolette does, but overall, on the face of it, yeah, I think Nashville ends up in the better end of the deal. That being said, I can't turn around and say that, at least in the first few years, that Shea Weber can't make an impact for the Montreal Canadiens in terms of physicality and attitude and things of that sort on their blue line. And again, there's few guys in the league who can pin a guy against the glass and completely take a guy out of play quite the way Shea Weber does. So,
sure.
Yeah, I would say Subban certainly on the face of it is the higher end of the deal, but I wouldn't knock Montreal completely on the acquisition of Weber.
Okay. I'm just letting people know we may go 5 minutes over. I don't have strong feelings one way or the other about David Backes one. I think maybe they're doing it to basically get some insurance for Krejci for when he inevitably goes down every year. And so it does seem like it's a little too long, but, he is a glue kind of guy, and maybe they feel like they need that in the locker room. I'm going to sort of take the wait and see on Backes. And what do you think?
Yeah, Backes, I'm kind of in the same boat there. Initially, when the first report came out and they said it was a one-year or two-year deal, I was
right.
Like,
we
well, that's perfect.
We were like,
Boston. And then once the report came out that was 5 years at the number, I was like, all right, that sounds more like what Backes was supposed to get. But again, in this circumstance, it's an interesting spot for Boston because, again, as a team, they're kind of they're another team that's sort of in between what they were and what they're trying to be here in the future. And does he fit sort of that classic mold of a Boston Bruin player? Sure, he does in terms of his best. But again, there, we saw some signs during the postseason that Backes may be getting the decline, and that's the risk that's involved here potentially for Boston in signing him to this contract.
Mike, I'll let you handle Backes, and then you could start on the Alexander Radulov whip around.
Well, I mean, Backes, I think he gives the Bruins some flexibility because if Krejci is down, he can play the middle, and then when Krejci comes back or for the five games that he is healthy, Backes can move to the wing. So he gives them some flexibility. Again, the problem here is the length of the contract. I think we all knew that, he was, St. Louis was not interested in signing him to anything longer than a 1 or 2 year deal after all the years that he'd been there and after his numbers have been declining considerably. Boston is in a situation where, they finally cleared up their cap problems after years and years. And what do they go out and do? They sign Torrey Krug for 5.25, and they overpay David Backes. So they put themselves right back in the same situation. As for Radulov, I, as an observer of the Maple Leafs and the Atlantic Division, will sit back and watch the Montreal tire fire because I think the Weber acquisition, he's a great defenseman, and he will help them. But Radulov is such a wild card. And I'm just expecting him to be, this is a guy who hit his coach in the KHL with a stick. So what do you think, Michel Therrien? Is he wearing Kevlar? Because I think he should be.
All right, so here's what I'll say. First thing is I noticed some people online were sort of thinking, like, and I did the post, a post where I said this is like a Semin-like signing. I didn't say that to disparage Russian hockey players. I said that to sort of say, you know, Semins and Radulov are basically in the same boat. When Radulov came back, he did score like 19 goals, but he really didn't prove much, and he left again. And so now he has everything to try and prove again with a failing KHL, which may not even be there in another couple of years. And I don't know. I mean, do we even know the dollar figure? Did anybody, is it 7
million? 5.75.
5.75.
Yeah, 1 year.
A lot of money to pay for a guy who may score you 20 goals.
He was asking close to 7 million, wasn't that? That was the word he was actually initially when he was first coming over. He was looking for 7 million. And
so is this a bargain,
teams
Ant, is that what you're telling me? Is this a bargain?
So am I, Anthony. I'm looking for
probably
7
million. Probably in his mind, in Radulov's mind, it's probably a bargain in his circumstance. I find it fascinating. I wonder whether or not he even realized that Shea Weber had already been traded there already when he signed him because of what happened a few years ago in Nashville. But, again, it's been 4 years in this circumstance, and you do kind of – again, this is his last crack at the NHL. Everybody knows that. Is he offensively capable? Yes. But, again, the key is going to be for him if he can keep his head on straight coming over again and realizing, you know. But, again, he's going there and he's dealing with a coach in Michelle Terry, and that it's just like – it's one of those things where I just sit back, put the microwave – put the popcorn in the microwave, let it pop, sit down, watch this thing because, as Mike said, tire fire, you name it, there is potential for that in Montreal this season, no question.
Yeah, we'll see. Let me just add this, Russ. Andrew Shaw, Brendan Gallagher, Alexander Radulov. I'm waiting for the signing of Matt Cook and Dale Hunter.
You know, but it could work great, right? I mean, it could be really hard to play against and work great, or it could be the Hanson brothers. Like, we just don't know. I mean, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt early on, and then we'll sort of see. We'll see how it goes. You know, I know earlier in the day, I think the whole world was kind of wondering what the Colorado Avalanche were up to, and I think I finally have seen something. You know, they didn't sign Nick Holden, so the Rangers got him, fine. That's a good depth signing for them. Doesn't kill the Avalanche. But I see now that the Avalanche signed Patrick Wierkocz, and I think that's a good under-the-radar signing. Because he has a lot more offense than Ottawa ever let him show because of Carlson and other guys that play the power play. And so that's something where, you know, this is a guy that could possibly impress people more than we'd expect. And Joe Colon's always a decent signing, so he goes there. And so maybe now we're starting to see a little bit more of a plan from Colorado, Ant.
Possibly, yeah. And you have that, and they also signed Fedor Tuten, who was also – it was like basically buyout special here for the Avalanche between Mirkoch and Colburn going there as well. Colburn's actually a rather interesting signing for them as well. He has 19 goals from last year.
He's a big guy.
A big body as well. He's a big guy, exactly. I think he can actually be one of those good under-the-radar signings for them. And again, Tuten's going to have a lot. Yeah, he could hold him. And again, Tuten is a player that I think, you know, in a more limited role with the Avalanche might be okay. But again, towards the end, obviously, with Columbus, it wasn't looking great. But I did, when I saw the Wierkocz signing, I was like, you know, that's a good – solid ad there if he can bring things along. So I'm actually, that one I really did like.
Mike,
I think, you know, it's funny because I the expectation about Wierkocz in Ottawa was that, you know, he would be more of an offensive defenseman after, you know, the first couple of years he did pretty well. I was wondering as soon as I saw that signing, is that sort of the stopgap if they do trade Tyson Barrie? Because they added a couple blue liners. I'm thinking, okay, I don't know if he would factor in as a power play guy because his offensive numbers have dropped off the last couple of years. But you might think that him getting pulled off the market, you know, supposedly by Joe Sakic, that maybe they would turn around with the prices that are out there for defensemen, that they could, you know, maybe they don't want to sign him for $5 million a year. Maybe they want to use him as an asset and trade him. So that's what I thought when I saw the Wierkocz signing.
All right, so I'll give everybody an opportunity before we head out for one more guy who you think will go somewhere and maybe hasn't been talked about a lot. I'll stick with my I'm going to go with Paul Gostad for Detroit, because They need help up the middle. Maybe last minute they'll get him signed to a deal. He's not the fastest guy, but, again, he's a great face-off guy, and I think that's something where that could be a bit of a help for Detroit because I think they're going to need help in that area. That's just a hunch. I have no inside knowledge. Ant, what do you think about anybody else that's still out there?
Well, I mean, certainly at the moment we still are sitting out there with Chris Russell has not yet signed.
Mm-hmm.
Now the word, again, what was, Mike, the word was originally Toronto was looking at him?
Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, but I'm getting the impression that Toronto is cooled because Lamoriello says he's not paying any big money, so I don't think it's going to be Toronto.
Yeah, so, I mean, we also have Jason Demers that's sitting out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
So Demers is going to be an interesting one. I know Edmonton was obviously pretty interested, and a lot of people were thinking that Demers was going to go to Edmonton. I think he's trying to gauge other offers. I still think he ends up there because in Edmonton because I think there's a need for him there.
Okay, Mike?
I mean, Ant stole my. I was gonna say.
Oh, he stole your thunder. Were you gonna use that line, really?
Yeah, I was gonna. I was gonna use Russell, but I mean, Sam Gagne does intrigue me because he still has what I think. I mean, in spite of the fact that he really didn't produce that much in Philadelphia, but at the end of the year, I thought he started playing pretty well.
Yeah,
when he got
me
the,
too.
Got
he did.
We all thought
and
that.
And he's only 26 years old.
Right.
So, I mean, if he gets a one-year crack someplace where maybe they give him a chance in the top six, I think he could come back and be a fairly effective player. This, you know what this smacks of, Russ? This smacks of the Chicago Blackhawks. I can just see them signing him for $1.5 million for a year, and he comes
mm-hmm.
out and he scores 25 goals. You watch.
Mm.
We'll call it the NXL. Oh, boy, it's getting late. The NHL exception, like the NBA has that – exception contract, and you know that would be, I guess, the equivalent of that.
That's yeah. Thought.
That's it. That's all I got. We're gonna go hit the cottage or the bar or something. July 4th coming up. Happy Canada
I'll see you
Day.
At Dev. I'll see you at Dev Developmental Camp, right, Russ?
I will see you at Dev Camp next week. Yep,
all
I
right.
will be there. Enjoy, Mike. I'll see you down the road. I don't know if I'll ever be in Buffalo again, but you know, you never know.
Next year for the combine.
Oh, Jesus, you're right. All right, that's it. We'll catch everybody
all right.
next season.
See everybody next year. Take care.
Beer, mustard, honey, if that's not got your taste buds going, I don't know what will. Well, the sticky sausages aren't just for Debbie. They're for you too, because Asda's extra special chipolata sausages are just £1.75. You can get all these ingredients at Asda, as well as a full recipe at asda.com/James Martin.
Selected stores subject to availability. Chipolatas 375 grams.